Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Yes! 720 WGN. John Landecker on a Labor Day afternoon. It's 3:37, and would you welcome to the radio station a very good friend of mine, Gil Gross. Gil, are you there?
I am there. I'm not all there. It depends who you talk to, but
of course,
for the purposes of radio, I'm here.
Now, could you hear what I was playing on the air?
Yeah, I could, which was really interesting because somewhere out there in the ether, there's this three-hour Labor Day special that I did for a network that shall not be named. And it has nothing to do with competition. I just don't name them until I see the actual check.
Well, that's the best way.
What? Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things we did for that is years ago, I sat down with Oscar Brand, the folk singer, who was the longest running host of a radio show ever.
Where was
ever.
This? Where?
Oscar was at WNYC in New York, which is a public radio station, doing a folk song show that was on for over 60 years.
Wow.
Yep. Started in his late 20s, did it right to the end. I think he passed away just a few years ago at 92. Yeah. When he started out, his guests were Woody Guthrie, some of the people you were playing, and they were young and alive, you know, all that good stuff. And
and
we did like a history of Labor Day songs and things. Yeah. So it was just very cool to hear you doing that.
Oh, well, thank you. Actually, that's not what I was talking about.
Well, I only heard the last 3 minutes of it, so.
Okay, now wait a minute. No, I was asking if you heard, let me try to find this again.
Yes.
Hold on a second. Give me just a moment. See if you can.
If I heard the White Sox won four in a row, yes.
Yeah,
and
no,
I passed out and they had to throw water on me.
Hold on a second. Let's get this going.
Okay.
Come on, John. Come on, move that up there. Nope. All right, Gil Gross, name that tune.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you remember anything about that at all? Does it lodge in your memory?
It lodges from some TV show that I used to walk out on when my parents turned it on.
Did you ever join the group over at my apartment to watch Nightbeat on Channel 9? You did, didn't you?
Wait, on Channel 9? Yes. I was the guy, and boys and girls, this tells you how long ago this was. I was the guy who was going, can we turn it over to Benzequin? Because
Carl Grayson,
I was that guy. It just acted like I wasn't there.
Carl Grayson, Marty McNeely, we'd all be in the Landecker apartment, you and me and Sarat and probably J.J. Jeffrey and who else, and just waited for that show to come on. And that is the original Nightbeat theme here on 720 WGN.
Yes. The sad part, by the way, about those viewing parties, everybody, is that we were still in Landecker's house, just kind of like waking up when Ray Rayner was on. So that's gives you an idea what those evenings were like.
I'm like, am I hallucinating or is that a goose on TV? You know,
and is that large dog a co-host or what is that thing? Yeah. John, I think your beer had something in it. Yeah, there was those evenings.
But I discussed earlier that I believe the statute of limitations and all the things that were done at that time has run out. And so there's nothing.
Excellent.
There.
Yeah. Excellent. The fine thing for both of us.
Yeah, because otherwise neither of us would be here probably. I would like to fill in.
I almost scared you out of Chicago your first night on the air, so there's that.
God. Go ahead. Tell it. Say it. You brought it up. You opened the door. So I get to Chicago to join the radio station. And to do that, they break you in on the overnight show. So I'm in,
right.
I'm in the station maybe for the first time. I'm doing the show overnight.
Yeah.
And what happens, Gil? What happened?
What happened is Al Rosen was one of the engineers, and Eric DeWeese, a friend of mine since college and to this day, as is Allie, and as are you. We're driving home from a triple date. Now, the fact we're coming home from a triple date, you know, together shows you that absolutely nothing happened with any of our three dates. So we're driving home and apparently up for mischief because other than paying for dinner, there wasn't any mischief. And we turn on LS and it's the new guy. The new guy is on. So we call the engineer, who was Bob Ferguson, and go, Fergie, look, the three of us are going to come up and just say that we are three drunks who come up from the London house almost every weekend night and then fall asleep in the studio. And Fergie, of course, says, fine, because we always considered the radio station, as I hope you will now, GN, a 50,000-watt tool for our amusement.
Yes.
Yes, and so we walk in, and we just fall down on the floor. And you go in a very high-pitched voice, what's going on? Who are these people? And the engineer goes, oh, that's just three drunks come up from the London house. Don't pay any attention to them.
Welcome to Chicago.
So you play a couple of records, and then you've got a double live coming up for playback.
Two live spots in a row for playback,
the Electronic Playground, and... Yeah. Mr. Norm's Grand Spaulding Dodge. Why do I remember this? God only knows. So I just had to give a nickel to Brian Wilson. So when you start these two live back-to-back commercials you can't get out of, I get up and I put my chin on your shoulder and I, in a drunken drawl, start reading the spots with you. And at this point, I think you have... aged, I think you're about 104 years old by the end of that 2 minutes.
And the people that came in and laid down on the floor turned out to be some of my best friends ever. And we'll have more on that with Gil Gross coming up.
Ladies and gentlemen, presenting, and I'm proud to present, two of the most unusual people in all the world, and I don't mean just the world of entertainment. They fit no patterns, meet no standards, except the standard of excellence. Ladies and gentlemen, John Lennon and Yoko. Imagine there's no heaven.
It's easy if you try. 720 WGN. John Landecker going back to the muscular dystrophy telethon of 1972 for John Lennon and Yoko Ono. 3:48, 720 WGN, Labor Day afternoon. Talking with a good friend of mine, Gil Gross, who attended, I understand, Millikan University in Decatur. Is that true, Gil?
Yes, that is true. That is where the broadcasting career began because I needed to work my way through school. So, yeah, WDZ in Decatur, Illinois.
And at age 23, Gil became the youngest anchorman ever in the history of ABC radio, while at the same time doing mornings at WLS. This is also true, correct?
Yes.
Just checking. This is all from Wikipedia, and Wikipedia, you don't know if it's true until you actually find out.
Actually, in fact, I've even deleted one or two things off my Wikipedia page where people gave me credit for things that well, it's lovely. I never did that, but thank you.
Thank you. Now, you did fill in.
I haven't looked at that page in ages. I guess I probably ought to look at it. Goodness knows what's on there now.
Well, you did fill in for Paul Harvey.
For years, decades. Yeah.
And
heard on this very radio station.
Exactly. So I'm thinking maybe some people are like, wait a minute, how do I know that Gil Gross name? Yeah, you can't just be somebody off the street and come in and say, hey, you want to fill in for Paul Harvey? How did that happen? How'd you get selected for that?
You know, if this was the strangest thing. You remember me from when we first met. And try and imagine this, boys and girls. I looked like somebody who, if I was walking behind you at 3 a.m. when I would come to work, you would basically call the police or start running or just duck into the first lobby that had somebody. I had this long, scraggly beard and long hair, and I was the least likely looking anchor. I was the kind of anchor you'd want to throw overboard. I mean, not the kind of anchor you would necessarily want for the news unless, you heard me. So I would do mornings at LS, and then I would go downstairs to the network newsroom and the Midwest Bureau and do things. And that's where Paul worked. And you have to imagine this. I'd be in there in the early morning sometimes at like 3 a.m., and I would look like I fell out of bed, which generally I had, and came to work. And Paul would come in just complete nattily dressed. I mean, everything was in place. You know, everything was ironed. His shoes were ironed. Everything was just, like, there. And but he liked my writing, and he liked that I would just sometimes – here's how polite Paul was. I would just take a phone message for him, and I'd leave it on his desk, and I would get a thank you note in letterhead from Paul. And for some reason, even though we could not be more different looking, he felt akin to me in some way, and that we both loved to tell stories, which was our politics were different.
Right.
Everything was different, but we loved to tell stories. And that's how that began, as unlikely. And it said a lot for Paul that he could look past what he saw, because it was another 7 years before I met my wife. So there were a whole string of people who could not look past what I looked like. And somehow he did. And I've always thought that says a lot about the man.
What was I was amused also, not amused, I was fascinated by Paul Harvey in the sense that there was on occasion I would imagine this, fill in on a morning show. And he, as you referenced, he was on the fourth floor, the station was on the fifth floor. And I would go down into the studios where Paul Harvey was broadcasting from.
Yeah.
And he would come in to the studios. He would take off his suit coat, jacket, wore a suit and a tie, and then put on an engineering gray coverall. Do you remember that? Do you know the piece of clothing I'm talking about? What's the description of that?
Yeah.
Is that the right word? A coverall?
That's the right word. And the reason for that was so he could change. Okay, we're going back in time, boys and girls. Even though John said we were going to bring things up to date, he's like, he's in the time machine. But he had to change typewriter ribbons. And he did not, because he would very often go to some, you know, luncheon or something where he'd be feted or meet advertisers or something. He did not want to get that on his white shirts. So he would put that on. So if he had to change a typewriter ribbon, it wouldn't get all over his clothes.
And now you know the rest of the story.
A very boring story, but you know the rest of it.
I'm talking with Gil Gross on 720 WGN. Okay, let's bring it up to current times. I'm staying away from issues and all that stuff this afternoon because allegedly Labor Day is a holiday. I don't know if that's an excuse to sell mattresses or whatever. And there are a lot of people who are out of work this particular Labor Day.
Yeah.
And we have all of the virus protocols, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So, and we have more people out of work, unfortunately, to come because there's a lot of people being laid off from major companies like JCPenney and all that are working in liquidation sales who are counted as working even though the end is near. So,
So I'm staying away from most of that stuff just to take a breather. Because
I never mentioned it.
Of course you can mention it. I'm not like that strict about it.
Gil just doubled down on it. Let me tell you about all the places that are going to lose their jobs.
No.
Sorry,
no,
newsman. Stop. Newsman Gil came out there for a second. We'll try and stuff him back in his bottle.
That's okay. Let's talk about your record collection. How many? Gil? How many?
LPs, I gave up counting around 11,000 something. Because it's not the point. The point is the music. I'd never considered myself a record collector. I consider myself a music collector. Then there's a mess of 45s, those which I did not use as, you know, frisbees. And then, you know, there's a ton of stuff sitting on the computer across from me that's downloaded. And then there's thumb drives. I got from a friend of Jack White the complete collection of Paramount blues records that Jack put into those sets and all that. So there's all these thumb drives hanging around. So I am at the point now where I realized the other day that I will die before I hear some things a second time.
Well, the reason I bring that up is that, you know, I see your see your Facebook posts, and you went through this series not that long ago where you posted a different album every day, and the variety the variety of what was there was really quite astounding. I mean, it was classical, it was folk, it was blues, it was rock, it was big band, it was just about every genre that you could imagine. And I never knew that you don't want to use the word collector, but had somehow obtained all these particular albums. I just never knew it. I was fascinated by it.
It gets to be the hunt, too. You hear about something, and this is the insanity. There's a great book. Amanda, I'm blanking on her last name, called Do Not Sell at Any Price, about people who collect and the mad hunts.
Yes.
And I don't know what it is, especially now, that you don't really have to own anything, because 90% of everything is somewhere on YouTube.
Right.
But there is that thing. Rhoda and I were driving through New Haven, Connecticut once, and she knew that for years I had been looking for a thing, which you can now hear online, by a singer named Elton Britt, country western singer, had the first million-selling country western song, and called Yodel Songs, because he had this bizarre, beautiful, almost operatic yodel, if you can imagine such a thing. So I was looking for this thing forever. I go to this, we're driving through New Haven. I see this second floor record store. I go, can we? She goes, be back in 10 minutes. Thanks, honey. So I run up the stairs of this place. I buy a couple of things. On the way out, this guy goes, there's a free box at the top of the stairs if you want to look through it. So I go it and I find it. She says, other than at our wedding and the birth of our son, she said, she'd never seen such a smile in my face when I came down. I had this grin. I probably looked like the Joker without the lipstick. It was that kind of grin.
Oh, thanks a lot. That's an image I'm not going to be able to get out of my brain.
It was. It was like a little, he's happy, but it's also, this is a little unsettling. That it was that kind of grin.
I love it.
And I had the same thing when we got married, too.
Gil?
Did not.
Thank you for all of your insight this afternoon. Next time, we're going to have to talk about how you like to read different books in different rooms of your house.
Oh, you saw that.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, I will, for Facebook followers, I will get back to the music thing. I am also acting these days, and I was learning Othello at that point, and I had to just stop posting a lot of things.
I learned the violin. You learned the Othello?
I learned the Othello, yes. It's a cello with a lisp.
Thanks, Gil.
And it murders its wife in Act 5, but that's a whole other thing. Take care, John. Love you. Bye, Chicago.
Love you too, man. Oh, God. I knew that was going to be good. He is one quick, very intelligent, multifaceted, ton of interests dude. That's all I have to say.